Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
They've done an independent study on people who die in jail before they even get their day in court. And apparently, the government, of course, keeps track of this number, but refuses to publish it. So Reuters took it upon themselves. And the lead of this article is titled, Why 4,998 Died in U.S. Jails Without Getting Their Day in Court.
Damn.
And I turned 21 in prison doing life without parole.
There's actually probably about another 2,000 more people, and we can get into that, that may have also died. But there are some things that these jails do with their numbers, if you will, to make it seem as if it's lower than it may actually be. So, for example, somebody dies in a jail and they call an ambulance and they're dead by the time the ambulance arrives. They posthumously file some paperwork that said, oh, yeah, they were released, and that way it doesn't count. So this article gets into some of that.
My YouTube channel is Larry Von, the Glass Man. On YouTube.
How do you spell it?
I hope it's better than Dave in New York's.
Yeah, commentary. But anyway, with the coronavirus, I was downtown. I've been watching these lines go in to vote. You know, sometimes people have to wait 4 or 5 hours, right?
My God.
Jeez.
That's insane.
It's a real thing, right? Because so many of the colored people, and they're standing in that line in the hot sun, without all elderly people not being able to use the bathroom or anything, with masks on their face, the masks tight on their face as they go through the line. And the Jews when they were being marched into the ovens to be fried, right?
Yep.
The gas chambers, they willingly marched along because they had been brainwashed. And you know what they thought? That was a public health prosecution that they'd done. They moved them from the ghettos because when they moved them there and cut all the utilities off, they accused them of being filthy rats, right? And then they say, we're going to liberate you from the ghetto. We're going to take you to a nice, clean camp.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They lined up and willingly went along with them, even as much to march passively into the gas chambers. So
yeah, Larry, you make a great point. You make a great point about the willingness of people to just follow along. It seems that no matter what channel you turn on, if it's ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox, it's just the different flavor of the same crap.
Yeah, so I'm looking it up right now. You kind of caught me off guard here. I had it in front of me, and then I didn't.
You were the one calling in, though, right?
Don't you have your show prepped on, Dave?
Yeah.
How darest thou?
I'm earning my pay.
Ian scolds me if I'm not prepped for the show, so you know I try to be ultra prepped.
You've never had that problem. I don't think I've scolded you for that.
I'm just making stuff up for filler here while
gotcha.
Dave figures out what the heck's going on.
I got lots of things to fill with if you need that. You can now rent a movie theater with AMC Theaters for $99.
$100?
Wow.
Yep.
See,
oh, we should do a film festival.
We should have a band play.
Is the theater in town AMC?
I'm not sure if you actually have to play one of the current movies or if they'll let you play anything you want.
I mean,
I doubt it's going to be anything you want.
I would assume if I'm renting the place, I can do within certain limits whatever I want, right? Like,
why
I wouldn't even have to play a movie, right? I could just rent the place.
That's what I would
and
like
invite
to think,
people.
But
why not rent a roller rink and have a party?
It says that
big open place, good sound system.
The rates start at $99 and increase to $349 depending on the movie, the theater's location, and any other add-ons like food and drink.
We've seen this before where somebody does, you know, flip the bird to somebody in a costume with a badge, and you know, if they take it through court, they determine that it's freedom of speech and it's perfectly fine for you to give the finger to an officer of the law.
Can you give me that headline one more time? Sorry.
Yeah. Exeter police officer berated and flipped off while patrolling for speeders.
Okay. Got it.
Well, I'd tell you what I think of that, but I'm on the FCC's airwaves, so right, I'm not allowed to.
Well, and it sounds to me like it could be something that happens when, oh, I don't know, a group of people do something known as cop blocking. That's where, you know, if a policeman pulls somebody over and, you know, a bunch of people see them, they mosey on over with cameras and, you know, sort of intervene in order to, de-escalate the situation or otherwise get the cops to leave the person
alone.
Seems
pretty silly to sit here and speculate about a story when we could just pull it up. So I've done that.
Good idea.
Rather than just talking about a headline. Police and town officials in Exeter are expressing their dismay after a new female officer on a speed patrol was harassed by neighbors, given the middle finger, and told that her presence would make it look like a high-crime area. Town manager Russ Dean shared his concerns about the treatment of the officer at a select board meeting last week. So this was the news was at a select board meeting, because they're always at the select board meetings, and the cops brought this to the selectmen. Dave Ridley called in to bring up this story about a town in New Hampshire called Exeter, where I guess they hired a new female police officer, and she was out doing an apparent speed trap. And what do you know? People don't appreciate the police running a speed trap
in their own neighborhood.
And, you know, there's a lot of focus on police accountability these days, more so than in recent years, more so maybe than in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
But these neighbors did not appreciate this bureaucrat enforcer being there, and so they flipped her off and allegedly harassed her. The town manager claiming that his words can't equate to how I'm feeling about it. He says he's disgusted and wants to condemn it publicly. The incident happened on Washington Street.
I wonder if he even asked her why she was mad.
Who's she?
Or whoever did the flipping.
Apparently it was multiple neighbors, so this wasn't one person.
Oh, I thought it was one person. Okay.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, did they even ask why they were mad? I'd really like to know.
They actually spoke their reasons why they were mad, according to the report here. The incident happened after the officer responded to watch for speeders in response to a resident who'd complained about speeding in the area. So one person called the police.
Okay.
And the police then responded with a speed trap.
I'm told that you can actually make a living flipping cops off.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I have missed my calling. Tell me more.
Well, basically, once in a while, if you go around flipping cops off, they'll arrest you.
Right.
Well, the thing is, that case has been tried
again and again and
so
again and again
many times that you'll get like a $50,000 payout when that happens.
Man.
So if you can bait them into arresting you once a year, you know, $50,000.
There's this horribly produced and moderately funny B movie called The Middle Finger. And it's about this fictitious character whose superpower is he turns into the equivalent of a giant middle finger. And I'm wondering if we could just marry those two things together. Maybe we redecorate the no-mobile with a giant middle finger on top of it. And we drive around finding police that are doing, a larger version of cop block.
My way of giving them the finger giving the finger to the police is when I've got it painted up like a cop car and I put the Jolly Rogers on it. That's my thumbs up to them.
Well, you know what else
would
be good?
Or my middle finger up to them.
Is if you get pulled over and the costumed person with the gun does hand you a bureaucratic piece of paper that says you must now pay them or go to court or whatever, you can in return go, oh, here's one for you. And it's like a little post-it in the shape of a middle finger.
I've actually got a new project that I'm embarking on that's intended to provide just that. And that it's actually an old project that I'm trying to raise from the ashes like the phoenix.
I see. So, and this is about police accountability and how to achieve that?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the project is actually two projects. The first one was Cop Block, which, I was there when Pete and Nademo formed it, and I always loved that organization. And they kind of drifted away, and leadership never passed down to anybody else. And then the second program is literally a program. It's a computer program called Cell 411.
I'm familiar with that, right?
So what Cell411 does is it's a handheld communications app that's designed so that when you have an emergency, you send out a message that goes to other people in your cell. So a cell is like just a group of people. It's a mathematical term. Basically, in order to become part of the organization, all you do is install the app on your phone and start watching for people being victimized by police.
You know,
or have it on your phone so that when you get pulled over by police, maybe you'll have what happened to me. I was using this app one day in Manchester, and I got pulled over because the police were. I had a roommate who was a prostitute, and the police were harassing the hell out of me, and so I was already hit. Pork 411 and Colin, about 5 minutes later, because it was right near where Colin was, he comes driving by us and yells "F the police" out the window as he's driving by the cops, at which point these cops completely lose interest in me and go chasing him off.
Nice.
And I just looked around like, I can't believe this just happened. And I got back in my car and I drove away because there is no, I was tempted to yell after them. Am I still being detained? Am I free to go now?
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
It's a bit of a marriage between the ideas of Cop Block and Cell 411.
And Uber.
And Uber, if you will, right, because there is an app involved. And we were talking during the break, and I had asked nobody if he had some sort of a title for this thing, and well, nobody, why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, well, yeah, I've already registered the domain. I'm calling it copblock.app.
Copblock.app.
There will be a branded version of Cell 411 for it, which will serve. It will probably be gaining a lot of of features, but I've just inherited the source code.
Nice.
This wasn't an open source app. The Shire Free Church was kind enough to buy the source and release it.
So the church liberated the source code. Okay, very nice.
And so I'm going to basically prepare it for distribution, and then it's got a lot of commercial parts in it that I'm eventually going to rip out and replace with open source. So it will be a purely open source project.
Nice.
And towards that end, I'm looking for programmers.
At least 2/3 of the dead inmates identified by Reuters, 4,998 people, were never convicted of the charges on which they were being held.
And that's true of a great many of the people. Something like 3/4 of the people, I think, currently incarcerated in the United States have never been convicted of anything.
Right. And we also know from previous topics and research on this that the majority of people who are arrested for victimless crimes. That is to say, a crime where no person or property was harmed in whatever it was. These are crimes of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Oh, you violated, you know, this particular writ of law that says you can't do a thing. Prohibition.
Or maybe it's just a war criminal arresting you because the U.S. government randomly went to war with you. What exactly is their justification for being at war with the pot smokers? You know, where we didn't like to support their wars, so they go to war with us.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem right.
Yeah. You know. This is, you know, somewhere between 5,000 and 7,500 people dying in the system without having been convicted before they even get a chance to get a court day.
People with titles are just other people who have no more right to do anything than you or I.
And that's the slogan of Copyright. Badges don't grant extra rights.
To make laws, other people have no more right than you and I to jail people. They have no more right than you and I to penalize or tax people. They're just other people. Now, if that one message can get in the minds of everyone and pass that along and pass it along, things will change, because then the average individual will go, wait a minute, I don't have to put up with this crap. I mean, who do you think you are? That kind of thing.
I agree. So, I mean, I can't imagine if my neighbor who lives next door to me came to me and said, hey, give me 25% of your income, or I'll throw you in a cage, or otherwise I'll pull out this gun and threaten your life. I would have, you know, I would, of course, be in the right to defend myself or otherwise refuse his generous offer.
By any means necessary.
Yes. So the trick is to not use terms like government or the state, but to speak of individuals as individuals or small groups as small groups. But typically, when someone does something, when someone makes a law, when someone decides to tax you, there are certain people that got together and said that. We need to point out who those people are.
Jet, you mentioned at the top of your call that if you could get people to, you know, stop using these terms, that it would set people free.
Maybe you should pass a law.
No.
Hang on. Nope. I have to ask, you know, what evidence do you have that that's true?
Well, first of all, I have to reiterate that it's the phraseology of explaining to other people that they're just other people. That's what will change things. Just using the words. See, most people are confused by that. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people, most of us, because we're in this same group, we think of these things. When we say government is bad, government does this, mm-hmm. it clicks differently in our heads than it does in the average individual. What I'm trying to get you to understand is the masses still believe, because they obviously flock to the polls, they still believe in this fantasy world.
That's a fact.
That you can get someone else in a position to do good when when there is no history of it whatsoever.
Well, I think
it doesn't bother me that they flock to the polls. I just want them to vote for nobody when they get there.
Well, and I think it's more a matter of people not wanting to take personal responsibility.
A corporation is basically a tool for escaping liability for your actions.
Right.
You create a legal fiction, and if it goes bankrupt, then if it does more damage than it ever did harm and goes bankrupt, then the people who have been profiting off it for years don't have to pay any of
the but it only exists
back.
In your mind.
Well, it exists in the law. It's a legal fiction.
Law is a legal fiction.
Collectively, the human mind. Yes, exactly. The whole thing is a fiction.
Well, it also exists in the form of a court system that will literally kill you.
These are people who believe in the fictions.
People who believe the fictions will then enforce
these are religious zealots. These are violent, crazy, evil religious zealots.
In the same way religion exists. Right. There are buildings, you know, that people
religion
go to who
belief.
Are religious.
But
religion is, you know, it's inside your mind. It's a belief system.
The Antifa argument. Oh, Antifa is just an idea. It's not an organization. And it's like, well, it is also an organization. It's a group of people who have mobilized for a purpose, and their reason for being so aggregated may be very abstract.
I mentioned a little bit ago in the show that the number of unemployed Americans versus the number of Americans who are out of the labor force are two different numbers. I like to point this out again and again and again and again and again and again and again, because it used to be probably well before I was born, so, you know, at least the early 70s and before that the government would report closer to appropriate numbers when it talks about unemployment. But what they do...
I don't think so. The unemployment rate is a specific number.
Well, it's changed over time, but what I'm saying is... What I'm saying is the government currently, when you hear on your local news and they talk about the unemployment rate, all it is a measure of people who have recently filed an unemployment claim.
Mm.
It does not reflect people who have not been in the workforce for years.
Mm-hmm. No, that's actually not how they calculate the unemployment number. The unemployment number is calculated by doing randomly targeted phone surveys. And they ask two questions. Do you have a job? And are you looking for a job?
It's based on the
self-report to those two questions, if you don't have a job and you are looking for a job.
As Fed Chair Jerome Powell noted in remarks to the National Association for Business Economics last week, a broader measure that better captures current labor market conditions by adjusting for mistaken characterizations of job status and for the decline in labor force participation since February is running around 11%. The big picture. During the Great Recession, the number of people not in the labor force increased by an average of 0.12% or 96,000 people per month, according to an Axios analysis. During the month of April, the number increased by 7% and remains 6% higher than it was in March, an average of 713,000 people removed from the labor force each month. So during the Great Recession, it was 96,000 people per month. During the month of April, it was 713,000 people per month by the same barometer of measure.
I lost my job. Well, I didn't really lose it. I still know where it is. It's just every time I go there, somebody else is doing it.
Have you looked behind the couch?
So,
as a matter of fact, that's exactly where I worked.
Nobody brings up an interesting question about, you know, how many of these people that are in this 100-some million number of people who aren't unemployed, but people who are just not in the job world.
Nobody. During the break, I did a quick little Google research. And indeed, the national numbers for unemployment do come from a survey conducted by an organization known as CPS, not Child Protection Services, but the Current Population Survey, where they gyrate through a couple hundred thousand households and settle on about 60,000 eligible households every month. And they rotate through those in groups of 800, apparently, to arrive at their numbers. And so I want to clarify something for the listeners. The basic concepts of unemployment and employment are divided into these four simple things. People with jobs, they're employed. People who are jobless, looking for a job and available to work, are unemployed.
Oh, you're right. There's three questions.
The labor force is made up of the employed and the unemployed, and people who are neither employed nor unemployed are not in the labor force.
So right. Contractors are not in the labor force?
Correct. Contractors are in the labor force because they are working.
They're not employed.
They don't have to be 1099 or 1040 employees. All technical professions have jargon, and the reason is because the technical jargon of the professional.
Yeah. The word employment and unemployment are not technical jargon.
Okay, but the thing is, to
they're
an economist, they are. And when an economist uses that word, he knows exactly what it means, he knows how it's defined, and he knows how it works mathematically with the other... I managed to get this out of a community college economics class.
I managed to get it off the internet in 3 minutes or something. So that's all fine and good.
But then I had to explain why it was important to you.
The point is that the people in this this limbo, this never never land of neither employed nor unemployed, spiked up to over 100 million, and that should be concerning for anybody who's even remotely interested in the economy as it continues to go belly up.
Yeah, well, this isn't the way you want to get there.
No, not at all.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we had 25% labor force participation 100 years from now, but with everybody getting their needs met just fine, just because people don't have to work as much in order to meet their needs.
According to the Federal Reserve, apparently it's one of their branches or whatever that's doing this, or BLS.gov. I'm not sure what that stands for. But
Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay, thank you for that. Not in the labor force includes people who are neither employed nor unemployed. They are not in the labor force. It includes retirees. So this number does include
weird,
a large number of people who've said, I have no intention of working. So this isn't like just people who've been thrown out of work or otherwise can't find a job. It does include people who have decided they don't want to bother to work anymore for whatever reason. However, it also doesn't seem to include children. So let me go through the list here. It includes retired persons, students, so college age, maybe teenagers, those taking care of children and other family members. So caretakers, like stay-at-home moms.
But it includes them mostly as not available to work, right? Or not looking for work. So they would not be regarded as unemployed.
So some of the not in the labor force are considered looking for work and some are not. But the numbers we're reporting here with 100 million include people who are also not looking for work.
Yeah, because that's called the labor force participation rate. And it's all of the people who are not in
the labor force.
Yeah, the specific. Everybody in the labor force is either employed or unemployed.
And looking. Police officers leaving Seattle Police Department in record numbers.
Yay!
Round of applause, everybody. Seattle, Washington. Officers are leaving the Seattle Police Department in record numbers.
Yay!
Yay! According to data released Friday by the city, nearly 40 officers left in September alone.
Well, that's still not as impressive as what they did in Dallas when the Black Lives Matter guy shot 5 cops and 100 retired over the next month.
Yes, that would be better news. The loss of officers in the month of September is double the number of losses for any month on record in the city. City officials say this is leading to a public safety issue.
By the way, it's only 3% of their total force.
And it is leading to a public safety issue. I believe the public is far more safe without these 40 cops in Seattle. Seattle cops, by the way, if your listeners aren't familiar, are notorious for being a-holes. Their abuse record goes far beyond the 20 years that I spent there. It seems to be that in order to be a police officer in the city of Seattle, you must abuse and otherwise treat people as if you are the tyrant.
That's true in most places, though. I mean, you just happen to live there.
Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin. I'm sorry, it's Jenny Durkin. She went full derp.
Derp.
Derp, derp, derp.
Derp.
Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin says if the staffing trend continues, it will take the city back to policing staffing levels that they were at decades ago. But since
they're going to have to repeal some bad laws.
But since 1990, the population in Seattle has increased by 44%. Typically,
quick, somebody panic.
Yeah. Typically, I skipped a paragraph. City officials say this is leading to a public safety issue. If you look at 911 emergency response times, and we know, of course, with 911 that, you know, when you need help, help is, you know, when you need help in seconds.
When seconds count,
the police are
help
only minutes
is only
away.
Minutes away.
So if you look at the 911 emergency response
hours.
Times. She says you want them to be 7 minutes, but in September in the North Precinct, that number went up to 9 minutes.
Or whenever. Wow. I mean, they may not show up at all.
Yeah. A whopping 2-minute increase in their lack of response time.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about what kind of madness they're going to do when they get there. Are they just going to shoot you in the face because they didn't like the way you looked at them? Or?
Yeah. They'll probably just drive faster and, you know, get into more accidents with people. Typically, the article goes on, in the month of September, Seattle Police Department loses 5 to 7 officers. This last September of 2020, 39 officers left.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free. at freetalklive.com.